Euronet Plus Panorama is a weekly review of European news broadcast by our network of EU radio stations.
We're back and we have a packed plenary panorama in store for you today. As we enter the home straight ahead of the June polls, MEPs in plenary this week voted on key texts including artificial intelligence, media freedom and energy efficiency in buildings. On Tuesday, the 12th of March, MEPs really appear to have been on a roll. That day, the Parliament overwhelmingly backed the much-fated European Media Freedom Act, the first ever EU law to protect journalists and provide citizens with access to diverse and independent media content. The Act, which was agreed provisionally in December, obliges member states to ensure the plurality of the media and protect the independence of journalists, shielding them from a range of pressures. For example, pressure to disclose their sources. Slovenian Renew Europe member Irena Joveva hailed this groundbreaking law, reports RTV Slovenia.
The subjugation of the mainstream media to populists like Orbán, now Fico, and once upon a time Janša will come to an end. This law is truly groundbreaking in protecting media freedom. Of course, it also needs to come to life and practice the way it was conceived.
Similarly, the EU Commissioner for Values and Transparency, Vera Jourova, celebrated the historic vote, saying on X, "Independent media are essential to democracies. It's the duty of democracies to protect them." Yet some remain unconvinced that the new law will hit the mark. Some, like EPP member Romana Tonc, who did not mince her words on addressing the commissioner.
Commissioner Jourova, I do not trust you. You say one thing, you do another. You demand transparency, but you yourself are not at all transparent. Since the extreme left government has been in power in Slovenia, I have been informing you weekly about what is happening in the public media. Complete politicization, harassment of journalists, purges, and what have you done for media freedom and the protection of journalists in Slovenia? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
As mentioned, Tuesday was certainly a busy day in Strasbourg, with approval also secured for the political agreement on the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive, an agreement that has been hard won and a source of considerable climate versus economy antagonism. The final text sets out to significantly cut greenhouse gas emissions and energy consumption in the EU by 2030, with a view to making all buildings climate neutral by 2050. Why all the fuss about buildings, you might ask? French Renew Europe MEP Christophe Grudler cites some key figures to our colleagues at EU Radio.
Public and private buildings account for 36% of the European Union's greenhouse gas emissions and 40% of the energy consumed. The fight against energy waste represents an estimated 75% of buildings in the EU, 75% of all buildings. We need to tackle this problem as a priority. Better insulation means lower consumption and therefore also lower costs for the end consumer.
From 2030, 2028 for public sector buildings, any new construction will now have to be zero emission. In addition, energy reduction targets will be set for other residential buildings, including the phasing out of oil and gas boilers by 2040, and renovation quotas imposed for the leakiest non-residential buildings, although agricultural and historic buildings can be exempted. The approval of this text has been a boon for manufacturers of heat pumps and solar panels, which will now very much be seen as the future-proof choice. But there are niggles to iron out, as Grudler explains.
The first problem is certification. In other words, when you assess your home, depending on whether you're in Italy, France, Spain or Denmark, the assessment criteria are not the same.
So what can you do about this?
In practical terms, you have to train the assessors. Even in France, if you get two different assessors to come and look at your flat, you might get one who gives you an F and the other a G. This means that we need to step up the training of these assessors, certifying them to ensure a consistent level.
But niggles or not, Irish Green member Kieran Cuff is very pleased with the outcome, as AMS reports.
It will modernise Europe's building stock by setting so-called minimum energy performance standards, or MEPs, which require the buildings that waste the most energy to be gradually improved over time. And to support building owners with these improvements and protect vulnerable households and tenants, financing measures, information services and social safeguards are put in place before the standards are applied. A huge green jobs boost is expected with the implementation of this law. I believe the EPBD will deliver for people and for planet, and I am delighted that a strong majority of my colleagues agreed.
Up until now, the EU has deliberately spared food and fertilisers from its wartime sanctions on Moscow in a bid to preserve food security at a global level. Yet now, with a view to cutting off funding for Russia's war effort, there is growing demand in Brussels and beyond to impose restrictions on imports of Russian and Belarusian agri-food products, products that would include fertilisers. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk suggested on Monday that such sanctions would make it possible to protect the EU's agricultural and food markets more effectively and facilitate the export of Ukrainian products to third countries. A fellow Pole, EPP member Andrzej Halicki, stressed that action is essential as these agri-food imports are destabilising member states' agricultural markets. Polski Radio shares his comments.
2 years after the war, food goods from Russia and Belarus are still flowing into the European market from these two regimes. We cannot tolerate this. It is economically unjustifiable and morally unacceptable.
In a debate in the European Parliament on Tuesday, an overwhelming majority of MEPs supported this kind of embargo. The Commission is more reticent, though, fearing a number of knock-on effects, including price hikes in developing countries. The very same day, MEPs voted en masse to approve new rules criminalising the violation and circumvention of existing European sanctions. With sanctions enforcement left to member states, how rigorously breaches are identified and penalties applied varies widely across the bloc. The new directive provides a clear definition of possible sanction violations and circumventions, and makes them criminally punishable offences, leading to fines or even prison sentences. One way in which the EU's sanctions against Russia are being circumvented is by goods finding their way into Russia via neighbouring countries. Since the start of the war in Ukraine, European exports to Turkey have jumped by 41%, those to Armenia by 240%, and those to Kyrgyzstan by a whopping 887%. This cannot be a coincidence. In addition, there are many big Western companies that have still not pulled out of Russia. Their continued presence there begs a number of questions. Are the sanctions not hitting the mark in terms of financial impact on said companies? Or is there some other reason why they are failing to relinquish their Russian bases? According to Estonian transit and economic expert Raivo Vare, because many companies are hoping that it will be business as usual again before too long, they are doing their best to carry on under the radar. But this is not all, Vare adds in his conversation with Kuku Radio. In fact, he says, Russia is simply not allowing some companies to leave, holding on to them as a bartering tool.
In Russia, there is a procedure by which departure from a Russian property must be authorized by a special government committee, which meets once a month in Moscow and either grants or refuses to grant exit permits. There has recently been a succession of permits rejected. These companies are simply not allowed to leave. This is a conscious move, just as they take people hostage, journalists, random US citizens, to exchange them for their spies, so do I think they take assets hostage.
On Wednesday evening, the European Parliament discussed the recent attacks on humanitarian aid deliveries in Gaza. Their resolution on Thursday expressed deep concern about the catastrophic humanitarian situation and the risk of imminent starvation in the region, and called on Israel to open all land crossings to Gaza. As EU Commissioner Elisa Ferreira, who was speaking on behalf of the EU's High Representative, stated during Wednesday's plenary session, land distribution needs to be the priority.
All those concerned about the situation in Gaza should put pressure on the Israeli government to grant unimpeded humanitarian land access without blocking convoys. Other options are not enough. Airdrops are good, but insufficient. Sea corridors are needed, but take time. And time is of essence. An immediate humanitarian pause leading to a lasting ceasefire is urgently needed to enable the large-scale delivery of humanitarian aid and the protection of civilians in Gaza.
MEPs also warned in their resolution that there can be no prospect of peace, stability, prosperity or reconciliation in the region while Hamas plays any role in Gaza. A day earlier, Italy's Foreign Minister, Antonio Tajani, spoke to the Italian Parliament about the country's involvement in an international mission to deliver aid to Gaza. Radio 24 reports.
It is vital that we continue to work for the prompt release of the hostages, but also for an increase in aid to the Gaza Strip. Otherwise, we risk an even more devastating humanitarian catastrophe. We must get all the food aid needed to the Strip. We want to promote a coordinated humanitarian initiative, which I call Food for Gaza. I intend to bring together an initial roundtable of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs next week, including the Red Crescent and other organizations.
Thanks for listening. Join us again next week, and we'll take you on another tour of the Euronet Plus network.